And now I'd like to go ahead and welcome Kathleen W. from Woodland Hills as our main speaker.
Hi, my name's Kathleen. I'm an alcoholic. First off, I want to thank you so much, Annette, for asking me to speak. I love this meeting. And if I just walked out of here right now, I feel like my spirit is full. Thank you so much, that 10-minute speaker. I forgot your name because I'm at that age. Troy?
Yes.
Fantastic. Just That's as good as an AA pitch. I just love that. Thank you so much. And the spirit here, and I love how everybody reads the steps. I just think that's cool. We don't do that in Woodland Hills. I'm from Los Angeles. I was born and raised in Santa Barbara. Oh, my sobriety date is December 15th, 1991. So I thought about standing up because I heard all the December birthays, but then I was like, oh, you're going to speak for 40 minutes? Shut up. All right. So anyway, yeah, that's my birthday, December 15th, 1991. And in 1991, for the new people that are here, I'll tell you, I was not thrilled coming to AA with my court card. And, like, you know, I had just gotten out of jail for smashed my car. Like, I felt like the party was over. I felt like misunderstood. I too had problems with the God thing. I had problems. I felt like everybody in AA was a sparkly-eyed freak. That's what I'd call them. Like, get away from me, you sparkly-eyed freaks. You know, like with the, and back in the 90s, there was no cell phone, so everybody gave you a little slip of paper with their phone number. So I'd have my purse just emptied out with all these phone numbers. I am never calling these people. Jeez Louise. And I didn't have the brains to know that you know, you could probably just sign the, I don't know, I shouldn't give the tricks of the trade, but I was like, watched my court card like a hawk, and I'd make sure, I did that. Boy, they don't consider alcoholic personalities when they start doling out the consequences of the DUIs, do they? They're just like, what do you mean you have to show up if you're a minute late, you get kicked out of the class? What? That seems so bananas. I got kicked out of the class and you got to pay more money. Bananas. So what I did, outsmarting, because I'm a smart alcoholic, I decided to leave in the middle of the process, the state of California. I decided California was the problem. All I gotta do is go to Texas, where real people are, because everyone in LA is so fake and lame, man, you know. Everyone's a loser. So I grabbed my friend. Actually, she lives in Pacific Oaks, she lives by Carmel. My friend Robin and I, she was on a bender, and I grab her and I put her in my Jeep Grand Wagoneer, and we get on the 10 freeway, and if you stay on the 10 freeway, and you'll get to Austin. So I just pointed it straight. We had a cooler between us. We had wine coolers and beers in the car. Just goes to show you that court card, whatever, you know. But the sparkly-eyed freaks did, I heard stuff. I heard you guys. And it did kind of mess up my drinking, you know. And I did, when I'd start getting to my thing, which I always wanted to, I always feel like life's like a tooth drill for me. Zzz, I feel wound up. And I just needed the drink to just unwind and get to a, that's what I was going for. But then I would always at that point into blackout. So I stand before you if I didn't have blackouts, I felt like every time I drank, I had a blackout. And I didn't have a quiet blackout. I'm a person who, you see my jacket, like, perhaps I wear Christmas tree lights on my head, you know, like, look at me. My mom says those are my first words when I came out the chute. You know, you add alcohol into that. It's ugly. It's ugly. So I wasn't. So once I got a little AA in my head, I would get drunk and tell people about what kind of alcoholics they were. Which I was like, where is everybody? You know, people would, I'd clear out a bar pretty fast, you know. Anyway, so there I am in Texas, surrounded by losers. I felt like I was a loser magnet. I had all these like lines that I used as to sort of make myself laugh. But the bottom line is exactly what he shared, is that inside my heart, I felt like if you really got to know me, you wouldn't like me. I'm not much good. You know, I felt like something was wrong with me. I always have felt that way, and I can't tell you, I can't blame it on some tragic childhood. My mom was a drunk, my dad was a drunk, my sister was a dealer of cocaine. You know, I had all of these kinds of things, but we loved each other, and I grew up in Santa Barbara in surf culture, and my dad surfed, and I have a lot of joyful memories of my childhood, but I felt weird, and I felt like my family is tan and attractive and blonde, and I was a theater person, doing, and I just felt like a dork, and all the family pictures, I have like nose coat and sunburn, and you know, like the volume's turned up. I've heard that in meetings where people talk about the volume being turned up louder for alcoholics. I was a little more sensitive. You know, I laughed a little too loudly. I cried a little harder than everybody. And you know what? Here's a weird thing, and maybe some of the female or males too. I felt like I was pitifully ugly. Pitifully ugly. Anytime I'd see a picture, my mother passed away 10 years ago, and I had to go through all the pictures, and I divided them up, and all the pictures of me, I had scratched my face. Well, it was like, you know, it's me sober 27 years. I thought, well, I guess that was 10 years ago, but I still felt like, little Kathy, why did I, I wasn't that ugly. I was kind of cute, whatever, freckles. I wasn't on the Northern toilet paper ads or anything. I was just a tomboy chick or whatever, but I wasn't. It was so funny. That's the story I told myself. So ugly. No one, by the time I got into junior high, so ugly. No boys will ever like you. No one will like you. No one will like you. And then I had to develop all these other things. It reminds me of the Wizard of Oz, you know, the great and powerful Oz behind he's the little man, and then he has this giant flaming, this is the great and powerful Oz. Well, to me, I had to like sing and act and like, look at me, you know, like, cause I felt like the little guy in the booth was not enough. Too ugly, too weird, not very smart, not very interesting, you know? And I can't say that's why I drank. I just can tell you that that's just part of my makeup that made it so that when I was in the seventh grade and I found the other teenage alcoholic in Sun Valley, Idaho, and she got somebody to buy a six-pack of beer, we sat behind the Circle K and I opened up that bottle and I drank it, I felt like I couldn't hear that, no one's gonna like you. You're never gonna amount to anything, come on. I felt like I finally could blot that out a little bit. And then all of a sudden her brother, he leans over, he kisses me. I'm yeah. Like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna get me some more of this. You know, like, oh my goodness, it's fantastic. You know, and as you hear in AA, I chased after that, you know, for the next 15 years, right? I chased after that feeling. Connection, I think, is really what we're all seeking, connection. So when I got my crazy old court card after Fiesta in Santa Barbara, if you know about that, last thing I remember was limbo in the parking lot and shaklank, you know. When I got that card, I felt like I saw connection. I saw people in AA. I saw them. I saw a little bit of connection, but that wasn't enough for me. So I didn't finish my court obligations of the class and all that stuff. So I split, went to Texas, found a bunch of losers there. It wasn't me. It was the people I was hanging out with. And then, blazed a trail there, left Texas and moved to Nashville, Tennessee, where the real people were. Where they were way cooler than the people in Texas, man. And when I got to Nashville, that's where I met my professionals. That's where I met, like, people who wake up in the morning, they drink. And this was in the 80s, and it's when, I was into rock and roll, like Southern rock. That was my scene. And I had a record deal with Polygram, and they loved me being in Nashville, and they hooked me up with all these different songwriters. And then I met this guy, and he was just a stone-cold alcoholic songwriter. I thought he was the coolest thing ever. Of course, I remember him saying, you know what? I wanted him to fall in love with me. He never did. And he's like, you know what? He called me Killjoy. Just saying, if I do relapse, run! You know, he called me Killjoy. But I remember he's like, I was like, you know, me and you, I feel like we have a connection, man. And I feel like, come on, you know, like, and I was 130 pounds, like, a record deal, what? And he was like, I don't, the S word in my hat. I remember him telling me that. I don't S word in my hat, you know. And I was like, what do you, and he's like, well, we work together, it'll never happen. And I was like, all right, but you can spend the night, but I'm not, you know, you can sleep on the couch. So I slept on the couch in his room, in the family room. And then the next day, I wake up, and I come out into the living room, and there's like 8 musicians sitting around a coffee table. And this one tall, super skinny dude with chipped teeth and tattooed sleeves and really stringy hair. He was drinking, he pours a big vodka right into a big gulp cup, and I remember looking at him, and I was like, you know, dude, it's 1 p.m, and you're drinking vodka out of a big gulp cup? That's disgusting. Like, you gotta be an alcoholic or something. And he's like, and he says, he said, and I'll never forget it, he says, man, at least I ain't doing heroin. This is a true story. I married that guy 2 weeks later. I married him. Half of everything married, you know. I married him. And then I had no idea. I was living the movie of the week. I always wanted to be. This was some serious drama. Al-Anon, after you Al-Anons. How about that, right? Sheesh. No wonder why I was a drug. Drive anyone to drink that kind of Al-Anon disease. So anyway, I married this guy. And then, so I'm an actress. So in case I'm not Joan Cusack. Someone told me that. Are you Joan Cusack at a meeting last night? I'm like, no, I'm not Joan Cusack. She has a huge career. You would know who I am, but whatever. Anyway, I am not Joan Cusack, but I am an actress. So what happens when you're an actress is, especially when you got your eye on some other prize, because I wanted to be a rock star, I got acting jobs. Now I would love an acting job, and I'm like, I'm here, guys, you know, and they're like gone. But back then, I got acting jobs, and they just fly me to, you know, places, and then I'd go do these acting gigs. So they flew me to North Carolina to do this gig, and I come back, and I walk into my place, and all my stuff is pawned. CDs are sold. Homeboy's got he's a disaster. Disaster! And I go straight for the vodka, because that's what I do. And we got into this kind of thing where he would say, the only reason I do drugs is because you drink. You're drunk all the time. And I say, the only reason I drink is because you do drugs all the time. And which happens to be, interestingly enough, the dance my parents did. How about that? You know, I grew up watching that dance. My mom would say, I drink because you never work. My dad said, I can't get a job because you drink all the time. And, you know, as the Al-Anons in the room know, this is the dance of death, this kind of thing. And this is something that we engage in all the time. I see a lot of nodding heads. This is a familiar dance that we do. And it's heartbreaking. And it's just staggering to me how glorious and lucky and freaking fortunate we are to have stumbled into Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am living proof that I don't have to do that dance anymore, and I don't. Okay, so there I am, Nashville, Tennessee. Come back, all my stuff's pawned. I say, dude, Nashville's the problem. What we really need to do is go back to LA. I know a lot of really solid people there. Maybe we could go to AA in LA. It can be good. Or, you know, we can. And so we sent all our stuff by UPS and drove my little BMW, because I set my Grand Wagoneer on fire. I didn't mention that. One of my good nights, I threw cigarettes in the back of the, I had a futon, and I was like, woohoo, and threw cigarettes in the back, and, you know, it was unbelievable. Anyway, so I now got a BMW. So we drive the BMW across the country, we go back to Los Angeles, and I say, now you don't have to do drugs in Los Angeles. There's no, I don't know any heroin addicts here, you're gonna be fine. So we get our little house, and everything's going great. We, you know, it's embarrassing to pull that recycling bin out every day, but, you know, we're handling it. I'm handling it. And one day I'm putting my makeup on in the bathroom, and I hear a thump in the floor in the living room. And I come out, and he's leaned up into the bookshelves, and I have that feeling, you know, that you get, like the reptilian part of my brain was like, this is odd. And I tip his shoulder back, and he has, he's in a seizure. He's having a seizure. And I call 911. They come, it's very dramatic. I'm sobbing, the police come. I was like, he gets up, because I watch his blood, like I do the mouth to mouth and watch his color come back into his face. It gets up. He's like, man, what did you do? What did you do? I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. And I go to the hospital with him and tell him that I told them he was an epileptic, which is weird. Anyway, I would come back to the place, and as we come back to our house, limousine pulls up, and it's time for me to go do this movie in New Jersey. So I get into the limousine, and the limo driver pulls away. I promise myself I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm going to join the sparkly-eyed troops. I'm going to do that. I'm not going to drink anymore. Halfway to LAX, he says, you know, there's beer back there. And I say to myself, I'm just going to have one. I'm just going to have one beer. And I drink the beer. Then I drink another one, because it's a couple of beers. It's a couple of beers. How many times do I say that? Every day. It's a couple of beers. We're going to have a couple of beers. Drink the second beer. Get on the plane. Then I get into whiskey. I like the whiskey. Anyway, I get in a blackout. And then, I remember one image, which is the elevator and the bar at the hotel. And I got a choice. And I picked the bar, and I go and I drink. And then the next morning, my message light is blinking, and there's watered down vodka all over my bedside table. And I know the jig's up. I'm like, I can't. And I just have that feeling. And I missed the meeting, the cast meeting. So I call, I'm like, oh my, I don't know what happened. We had so much fun last night, you know, that kind of thing. And they had me go to do a costume fitting, but everyone knew I was fired, everybody. So it was all a big sham. You look great. Yeah, you look great. I was like, everyone's acting so weird. You know, I still had all this bravado, just because I never had any consequences of any kind. I mean, the DUI was terrible, the getting married and the pawning and the thing and all this drama was all terrible, but guess what the final consequence was that made me get like, I cannot do this anymore, was my acting, my ego, my career. Like the threat of that was like, I can't. And then when I got back to the hotel and I called my husband back in LA and he's like, baby, they don't want you on that movie. And I was fired and I had to take my 3 months worth of clothes back to the airport and fly back home. My husband picked me up, takes me back to my house, and I know what to do. Why? Because of my court card. So if you're here with a court card, listen, well, when the jig's up, you call Central Office, AA Central Office, that's what I did. And they said, go down to the log cabin, there's an Architects of Adversity meeting. And I did that. And I remember my husband saying, like, where are you going? He had his, like, underwear on his head with his hair out the legs. Where are you going? You know. I said, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I lived right up the street, and I walked down there. And they said, why don't you talk about the last 5 days at this, that was the format of this meeting, Architects of Adversity. So I raised my hand, I'm Kathleen. And every time I said, I'm an alcoholic, for 30 days at least. So congratulations to the 30-day. Haley, right? Congratulations, it's awesome. For me, for 30 days, I just sobbed. I could, every time I said the word alcoholic, because I watched my mom as an alcoholic my whole life. I told her at 13, I'm never gonna be like you. And there I was, I'm Kathleen. And I'm an alcoholic, you know, and just hearing the words in my mind, you know, it still chokes me up because it was so huge for me to admit that. It's just huge. I sometimes think that if all we do is just admit we're alcoholics, that's a big step. That's our first step, and it's huge, and it's something to be applauded. It's a beautiful thing to admit that you're alcoholic. I brought stuff up here because I spoke at the, you guys know A New Pair of Glasses, some of you guys? Such a great book. I love this book. And I got asked to speak at the Chuck D. New Pair of Glasses, Chuck C. New Pair of Glasses meeting. And I got to 38 minutes, you're supposed to do 45. I was like, oh shoot, I got no gas in the tank, you know. So I bring some stuff just in case. I'm not at that place, so just so you know, so don't pay. Don't pay. But I did bring something up here because it's from Bill, it's from Language of the Heart, Bill W., and I just loved it. Okay, what was I just talking about? See, I'm not a professional speaker, I'm an actress. All right. The truth is that in this life of each AA member, there still lurks a tyrant. The name of that tyrant is alcohol. The tyrant is cunning and ruthless. Its weapons are misery, insanity, and death. No matter how long we may be sober, the tyrant always stands at each person's elbow, ever watchful of an opportunity to resume its destruction. Like an agent of the Gestapo, it threatens each AA citizen with torture or extinction. Unless, of course, the AA citizen is willing to live unselfishly, often placing the welfare of AA as a whole ahead of their own personal plans and ambitions. So I come into AA and I start doing these steps. And I don't understand how, you know, I did like you. I tried to pick them apart and all of that. But at this point, because I did my court card, because I didn't satisfy my alcohol classes and the picking up of the trash, like I had to check in to county jail. And I had done a couple of pictures by that time. I was like, county jail, you haven't seen Murphy's Law, private school? You know, no, nobody has. that. Nobody cared. So I had to check into county jail. I had to do these things stone cold sober. And I did them willingly just to get that off of my, just to start cleaning up the wreckage. I just wanted to clean up the wreckage. I was getting so tired I used to say I had an invisible tail because I did like, I was a bar drinker and loudmouth, and I used to say, like, I don't mean to hurt people's feelings. It's my invisible tail that just slaps people around. It's not me. I'm a nice person, you know. Never mind the invisible tail. And then when I got into AA and started to do these steps, I remember doing my third step with my sponsor. And she had me do the third step prayer, which if you're new, it's in there. It's in the big book. It's a beautiful prayer. But one of the things that I feel like it did was teach me about turning the notion of higher power into being of service, bringing it into thy love, thy power, and thy way of life, right? You bring... Because I feel a strong connection with a higher power. All I have always, because of my creative life and my sense of humor. I feel like I have belly laugh for no reason for years. You know, it just was the alcohol started to douse that stuff. So when the dust started to settle and the sunlight started to shine in, I got to sort of remember, oh yeah. I have a lot of joy. I have a lot of joy to, I like talking to new people and finding out about them. I have like a lot of unselfish tendencies that have been buried in alcoholism and self-pity. Really, my self-pity was so overwhelming. You know, I felt like, and when you think about it, when you've got, you know, two arms, two legs, I got a lot of, like, if I'm just grateful for that, that's cool. You know, I feel healthy, but all that, like, I'm so ugly, you're never going to be, all of that is really a form of self-obsession, self-pity. So by the time I got to that third step, and I'm kneeling there with my sponsor in her house, and I remember saying, I love that power and my way of life. I know I'm an actress, a little dramatic. I started to cry again. This AA stuff touches my heart and makes me cry because I feel like I felt hope. I felt hope because I know about bringing thy love, thy power, and thy way of life to people. I know about that. So then I started doing my four step. And that's when, for me, and this is what I tell my sponsees, but that is where I feel like the goats get separated from the sheep, you know, sometimes, is when you jump into that fourth step. And it's not as a monolithic as people make it out to be. I think they make it out to be monolithic because of the freedom that can come from it. But the actual, like, writing a list of your resentments, like, Just do what your sponsor says. It's actually laid out quite beautifully and very simply in the big book. Just write that list. That's where I start with my people. You know who you're mad at. Write it down. Just write it down. People, places, and things. And I started doing that. And then by the time we get to what we call the fourth column, which isn't in the big book, but my sponsor did it with me this way. And we all do it different ways, but it's basically the same. But one of the things that we got to was, you know, if you're pointing your finger at this person, you got three fingers pointing back at yourself, which is where the freedom lies. For me, that's where I found freedom, because I felt like I was one of those life happens to people, you know. I just careened into, like, everybody does stuff to me. I was just this big victim. But when I got to really look at these kinds of things, I remember telling a sponsee, I have a sponsee, she's doing her sex inventory right now. And I told her that one of the interesting things that was revealed to me about my inventory with my ex-husband was that I was a girl who liked to feel tough and like a gnarly rock chick. That's what I wanted to be in my mind. So I picked this guy, this tall, skinny dude, tattooed sleeves, stringy hair, because I remember walking into a bars with him and feeling like, You know, I got it. I'm tough. But that's not about who that guy is. That's not who he is in his heart and his soul. I didn't care. I liked him for what he looked like. I was a superficial, and that was a bitter pill for me because I felt like, what? I put him through 3 treatment centers. I paid, you know, Al-Anons, I did all, and I have to, and, but when I got really honest with myself, that's not something I want to carve out for myself in the future when I want to think about a good, healthy relationship. Now, how much time do I have? I don't want to... 9:17. Okay, good. I'm doing good. I don't think I'm going to choke. I have a whole bunch of stuff to read to you. Poor Chuck C. up in heaven was like, what? 38 minutes? Anyway. But that was a very interesting revelation of, like, when you look and you look at the different relationships that you have, you know, what you were bringing into those relationships. And what ended up happening with me in the 4-step process with the fear inventory and the sex inventory and the base your 4th step inventory was that I got to sort of create a way in which I want to behave in the future. Because then we do, I read it to my sponsor, which is the 5th step where you read all this stuff to them. And it's not like, it can get epic, but when you just take it one day at a time, piece by piece, list by list, 15 minutes a day, that's what I tell. It ends up not being, like I said, this, because I've had sponsees just balk and balk and balk. And I'm like, dude, that is where the freedom is. Just start. Just do 15 minutes a day and you'll get it done. We do this thing one day at a time. Anyway, so she had me do a pretty quick 6 and 7 step, which is the having your defects of character removed. And I'm telling you now, 27 years later, I still work that 6 and 7 step, and it's entirely different than it was for me that first time I did my 12 steps. It means an entirely different thing to me. That's a step, those are 2 steps that you keep, I think you keep plugging away at, because guess what? Hard to imagine my character defects still surface from time to time. You know, I hit my knees. That's something I do on a daily basis. I hit my knees and I do my 7-step prayer. Anyway, so I'm plugging through these steps. I get to the 8th and 9th step, which is when you make amends. Again, this is another step some of my sponsees balk at, and I'm telling them, I'm like, freedom, I'm telling you. It's right on the other side. You're so close. Because what happened to me when I finally started picking these people off my list, and my list is sort of never ending because it grows, and then you have to pick them off your list again, and then it grows, and then you know, I keep redoing these steps every year, you know, is that I started to feel okay wherever I went, right? I didn't, in the grocery store, see someone like, ooh, you know, that feeling, and you go, oh, there's that guy, oh, I can't, you know, I could go to my high school reunions with the, I'm like, here I am. No, I don't drink. I tell people I'm allergic. It didn't work for me. And they're like, great, because you were awful. You're so mean to me, you know. And then I remember once there was this girl I was awful to, terrible. And I was nervous. This was my 10-year high school reunion. I was nervous to see her. My sponsor told me, just, well, how about you hang out with her? How about you hang out with her? And then when you're with her, just tell her, like, you can slip your amends. And you don't have to be like, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm making a little amends, whatever. So her name is Regina, and I hang out with Regina. And at some point, first of all, she's a really cool person. So there you go. I missed it in high school. Second of all, at some point I said, man, Regina, I was awful to you. I was so mean to you, and I don't even know why. I regret it, and I'm sorry. I would never do that to you today. And she goes, yeah, you were awful, but you were terrible. And Anyway, we hung out that whole night. She was super funny and great fun. We had great laughs and like, she's a great person. So I don't have a problem with her anymore. You know, the next reunion, I'm like, dude, you know, and like, we were like, hug, and you know, people are like, look at Kathleen, and you know, like, I'm just telling you, like, how great is that? I get to go where I want to go. That's amazing for a loudmouth drunk like me, you know. So when that started to happen, I started to feel pretty good about myself, and I started to get really involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was the cake girl at the Saturday morning strip group, and I was, you know, secretary of this. I just started really getting involved, and my best friend, she's my, I call her my best trudging buddy, and she and I used to go, what meeting are you going to today? And I just started to build a sort of AA family, and I... I'm so good for time. So get this. So this girl, so I end up at 5 years of sobriety meeting this, like, I play music, I write songs and stuff, and so the drummer in my band is cute, smart, funny, talented. And I ask him, I'm like, look, I own my own home, I'm sober 5 years, I look pretty good, you know, I'm 30 years old. I said, I think you and I should date. He's like, I don't date. What are you talking about? I'm like, no, I'm serious. I think we should go on a date. So this guy, we 3 weeks later, after we date, I get pregnant. But this is the crazy thing. I've been with him for 23 years. This is what I'm telling you about sobriety. I've been with this guy for 23 years. We like the same TV shows. We hike in the mountains every day with our two dogs. I got three kids, 23 years old, 19-year-old girl, 13-year-old boy. I am so blessed. I wanted to get into the whole Woodland Hills Studio City AA. I'm now involved in the Woodland Hills AA, which was hard. I had to show up to meetings like a newcomer because I had all my friends over in Studio City. And then I started going to Woodland Hills. And now I'm doing a show at the Hole in the Sky, which is the AA club. AA is my life. It's like the core of my world. And my world is freaking beautiful. And it's not anything that I ever dreamed of when I came down to LA. I wanted to be a rock star and a Barbra Streisand. I don't know what I wanted to be, but not myself. And today, being myself, not bad. So thank you very much.
That definitely deserves one more round of applause.